Hey, it's the radio show with me, VT, calling in from Philly via Portland. And we have my constant companion, Lou Pennywise, calling in from Phoenix via Los Angeles. What is going on, buddy?
Not much. Another beautiful day. What happened to our intro music? I'm feeling like unsat.
Actually, we'll have our guest beatbox a little bit. You ready to do it, Craig?
Craig's gonna do what?
Do some beatboxing. joining us is Craig from South Beach, the Miami Heat GM. So 2 weeks into the season, guys.
Via
South Beach, that's right. We're 2 weeks into the season, guys, and things cannot be more exciting. Did that sound convincing?
Yeah, it's been a great year so far. I love the parity in the league. A lot of teams winning that I didn't expect. A couple of teams really surprising me. But overall, I think it's an interesting season so far.
Cool. Well, what we're going to do today is talk about the top five teams in the league as of airtime. And then we're going to talk a little about the bottom five teams. And we're going to look at the top five teams and talk about why they're so awesome. And then look at the bottom five teams and talk about why they're not so awesome. And luckily, none of us are in the bottom five, so we escaped for today. But let's talk about the good stuff first. We're going to try to limit this to about just a few minutes per team because we want to keep the broadcast not super long. If we do about 3 minutes per team, that's about half hour. So let's try to keep it to like 3 minutes or less. There'll always be good things to say about everybody, but today we're going to say really nice things. We're going to start with Cleveland. 10-0 start. Cleveland's hot. You know, last year they had an early exit in the playoffs, losing in the semifinals to the Hawks. Now they're back, 10-0, top team in the league. Penny, what do you say?
I mean, everything starts and ends with LeBron, as always, best player in the game. But, you know, they've been fortunate so far. They've been healthy. You've got Andre Drummond, who's just been a man-child in the NBA, and he's only going to get better when we start upgrading the ratings. And he did a good job with some of the players that he picked up off the bench. I mean, Thomas Robinson was one of those diamond in the roughs. You've got Andre Miller, great backup point guard. Rodney Stuckey, a slashing scorer. Overall, Cleveland did a really good job putting the
you guys there?
Team together okay, as a team. You, yeah. That's how I would look at it.
Craig, what would you do?
What
would you do?
I'm here. Okay. What about you, Craig?
Yeah, what would you do, Craig? What would you do to beat this team? How do we beat this team?
How about just not show up? No game, there's no loss, man. Hey, you know, how do you beat them? You got to keep them out of the paint. I mean, right now, there's two numbers that I see when I look at Cleveland: 20 and the number 3. And that's because they got three guys averaging 20 points a game, and then they average 59 points per game in the paint. I mean, what do you do? You know, it's just there's not a whole lot you can do. You can't stop three guys from scoring 20 points, and you definitely cannot keep them out of the paint because LeBron scores half his points in there. So if you can keep LeBron out of the paint, you take away his 20 points, and you take away, you know, some of that paint proficiency. Because that's where they're winning games at. You know, they're just hard to beat. There's no formula for beating them. You just have to hope LeBron has a bad day.
Fun fact: Cleveland has all five of their starters in the top 100 in NLL rankings, including Terrence Ross, who's a 303 in the ESPN rankings.
Well, it does help to have Tony Parker and LeBron setting you up.
Right, definitely does not hurt.
All right,
setting me up.
They'll set you up in the way you don't want them to set you up. You'll be coming out of, like, the donut shop, and the cops will be coming after you.
Hey, been there, done that.
Yeah. All right, Craig, let's move on to the next team. The second-best team in the league right now, record-wise, are the Sacramento Kings, 8-1, with a guy named Sasha Khan starting at center. Craig, why are the Kings doing so well?
Again, just incredibly efficient. You know, they with Kevin Love, Klay Thompson, and Michael Conley, those guys are all putting up really good numbers, got really nice purrs. They're not scoring as many points in the paint, but they're definitely scoring a lot of points. They're just keeping guys on their heels. You know, they're jumping ahead early, and they're staying ahead. You know, the fourth quarter jinx just doesn't seem to affect them.
I mean, the interesting thing is these guys really don't have a good big man to play center. They've got like Myers Leonard, who still hasn't proved himself in the league, and they've got Sasha Khan and Channing Frye. It's like, who? I mean, meanwhile, Khan started last week because Myers Leonard was out with that dislocated shoulder, but now he's got the starting nod for this week. The guy's got not great rebounding numbers, 68 for offensive rebound and 57 for defensive, and he's bringing in 5.8 rebounds a game. But still, he's shooting 68% and hitting 7.6 points per game. That's not bad for a guy that's only making $1.2 million. But how much better would this team be, Penny, with a real starting center?
You know, I'm curious because I don't know if a starting center would make it better for them. What the centers that they have are doing is actually opening it up for Kevin Love. Kevin Love is beasting on the boards. And as a team, they're actually out-rebounding their opponents by about 1 to 2 rebounds a game. So, you know, they're giving Kevin Love the opportunity to be Kevin Love, and that's that rebounding god that he is normally. I mean, if you look at him with those big men that they have, I mean, Channing Frye is getting 7 rebounds a game. They're basically bodies that are getting in the way of the opponent and not letting them get the rebound, plain and simple.
Yeah, I mean, pretty good. This is Clamello really inherited a good team here, you know. What do you think? He's been pretty prudent about his moves so far, taking over for Carl Spackler, longtime GN. Got rid of David Lee, got back Channing Frye and Jordan Adams. That's the only move he's made so far.
Yeah. I think he dodged a bullet initially. I heard there were rumors that he was going to move Mike Conley, and I think now he's realizing that he was very smart to not do so.
Oh, are you talking about the deal that we shut down as their commissioners?
Oh, is that what we did? I don't remember. I was just saying there was a rumor that it was there.
For a whole lot of nothing, right? For a whole lot of nothing.
I'm sure Clemo is going to be sending us GM points for saving his ass on that one.
Yeah, probably.
But but actually, the big surprise that nobody's talking about is how well Jordan Clarkson's playing off the bench.
Yeah, we're not talking about him.
We're not talking about him. I wonder why.
Oh, and backstory for those of you that are new, Jordan Clarkson used to be on Dave's team.
And was given away in the worst deal, one of the worst deals I've ever made.
You did need a big man.
What did he get again?
Neither of them are in the league anymore.
No, I did get Ed Davis, but as part of the deal in a three-way. But I got, and yeah. I sent Drew Gooden, Robin Lopez, and Jordan Clarkson out for Sean Marion, Jordan Farmer, and Ed Davis. And I have none of those guys left.
Now, on your behalf, when you did send it, Jordan Clarkson was getting like 5 minutes a game in the NBA. So,
okay. Well, anyhow,
not that it makes you feel better.
You can't look back. Once the trade is done, it's done. You can't look back. So don't even worry about it. You know, it's history.
Okay, let's move on. Speaking of looking back, number three, surprisingly, Indiana 7-1. Lou, what's your take on these guys this year?
I'll be honest, I've been waiting for him to actually do something like this with the lineup that he's putting together. I mean, he's got some serious offensive firepower on that team now. I mean, you got Blake Griffin, you got Jamal Crawford, you got Goran running the point, passing it to everybody. P.J. Tucker's usually pretty good at hitting threes. I think one of the games that I watched, he hit like 4 threes in a row, and that's all he does. And then you've got Tristan Thompson, who's just a good rebounder. Now, he is a little undersized. And it seems like he's had a little bit of issue with some of those really good big centers that can clog up the lane. But at this point in time, I mean, if I was him, I wouldn't change anything because he's doing great.
Well, his one loss came to the Thunder in the first week, and that was when they had Valanciunas against Thompson on the boards. I mean, the other thing that you got to keep in mind is he's got a guy that I gave him last season. It was Vince Carter, who's hitting 13 points a game off the bench.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt when you have something like that, the ageless one.
Yeah. Right? Greg, what's your take on the Pacers? They're finally good. Now, of course, the one downfall about the Pacers being good is the GM got quite cocky.
Yeah, well, he's going to be cocky. And he's got a reason to be cocky. They're doing pretty good. And Sheed right now has got a lot of time on his hands. He's sitting at home, you know, he's dealing with his back issue. I hope he's feeling better soon. But Sheed's sitting there, and he's got like 15 monitors, and he's got a game on each monitor, so he's scouting every team. And so right now, he knows how to beat every team in the league. You know, he's got good players. Jamal Crawford's bouncing back from a down year last season. And it's like he's figured out the secret formula to making his team perform. So right now they're doing good on fast breaks. They're out rebounding teams. They're basically scoring pretty well on turnovers. They're kind of covering all their bases in those hustle areas. And of course, I mean, like I say, Crawford is just lighting it up. I mean, it's 24 points a game. It's not leading the league, but he's doing it a little bit more efficiently than he's done in the past. And when you got a wing player that can score efficiently, you're going to have a chance to win every game.
And Craig, by in the past, do you mean, like, ever? like this guy is, like, the original volume scorer, the volume shooter.
Yeah, but, he's been crazy for years, but he's a little bit more efficient this year. So, in fact, you think he's leading or all close to leading that team in per right now, which is pretty rare for him.
Well, let's see. I can see if I can find that out for you real quick. He is not leading the team in per. Sorry. It is the ageless wonder, Vince Carter, with a 23.8 per.
Well, what do you expect? You know, when you got lead feet and all you can do is stand and spot up shoot, of course you're going to have a high per.
Well, and keep in mind, you pointed out a great point. You know, yes, Sheet is laid up, and we do hope well wishes for you, sir. But that means all the man does is have time. And he does have 15 monitors. I think I've seen a picture of him on Facebook with him.
So
all this guy is doing is running sims against his next week opponents. So I guarantee you he's putting the best playbook out there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because I have talks with him all the time. And, you know, and last season he asked me, well, how did I beat him last year? And I told him I just let him outdo himself. You know, he was looking to adjust to me, and I just didn't stay still. So basically, that's what he's doing now. You know, he's got something new every week. So he learns from every. He's a true student of this league. I mean, yeah, he's a little cocky, but he's got a lot of personality, and he looks to get better every year. I got to take my hat off to him.
All right, let's move on to the next team just because of time, and I'm going to sit this one out. And it's the Sixers that are sitting with an 8-3 record, and they've got the fourth best record in the league. They actually have the second most number of wins, but the three losses bumps them down to number four behind Indiana and Sacramento.
How dare you?
Right.
Well, let's look at it. Let's be honest. Philadelphia, all they did was reload. Yeah, they lost a couple of players. They're not quite as strong in terms of big men as they have been in the past, and he's not getting the numbers that he wants from LaMarcus Aldridge, but LaMarcus Aldridge is still doing what he needs to do for this team, which is get boards, pass the ball out, and let the scorers score. If I'm looking at it, he's got three guys in the top 100 that are starters, and then he's got a couple of solid players off the bench. Now, I'm curious to see what's going to happen in the weeks coming up, because I know he's got players like McCollum, McLemore, Jabari Parker. You've got young players like Tyler Zeller. He does have Mr. Glass on there, so that's always a dangerous situation. But Kawhi Leonard is finally showing that he can play in this league, and that could be the difference to Philly staying on top. What do you think, Craig?
I think that has a lot to do with it. Also, they're number two in points in the paint. I think for years I've indicated that points in the paint, you know, is one of those numbers that you have to watch for, is because those are easy baskets. And that's not always about post players. It's just about getting into the paint and scoring baskets. And right now he can do that. You know, he's got LaMarcus, he's got Noah, he's got Lillard, you know, and then when all those guys are playing around in the paint, you got a guy like Mr. Glass standing outside in the corner, knocking down threes, keeping defenses honest. So he's definitely got a nice little mix of players. He's got great perimeter defense, great post defense. There's no guaranteed way to beat that team. You just have to hope that they have a day where they're not scoring, you know, 50 plus points in the paint, because that's half the number of points you expect to score in a game. If you score 100 and the other team scores 52 or 52 plus in the paint, they've already beat you, because they're going to score 40 or more, you know, through mid-range jumpers and three-pointers and stuff like that. So you really want to try and keep them out of the paint and limit their fast break opportunities.
And, you know, they're number four in offense, and they're number three in margin of victory. So, you know, if you're going to try and beat the Sixers, you better come out shooting, because you're going to have to outscore them.
Yeah, because you're not going to be able to stop them. So we might as well just run for it.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So
last team. Sorry.
Yeah. So Dave. I hope we patted your ego enough there.
Oh, man,
let's
great.
Move on to the next.
Thanks.
Time.
Neither one of you are going to get fired tonight. The last ones are actually really surprising, and I don't know how long they can actually hold on to the top five spot. And that's just because they've only lost one game. That's the Milwaukee Bucks. They're 6-1. The injury bug is hitting hard on that team. We just found out that Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is done for the season. You know, no one on this team is older than 25 except for Russell Westbrook and Marcin Gortat and Brandon Wright. Everyone else is under 25. You know, it seems to me, and I've said this before, GM Bad Wolf isn't really interested in winning. He's more interested in just collecting young guys and then replenishing young guys. Like, I don't think the Bucks have been good for, you know, like a championship quality team for years. I don't see them sticking around in the top five for much longer. What do you guys think?
After you, Craig.
Oh, me? Okay, well, the Bucks are officially the AAU squad of the NLL. They actually have the lowest or the youngest starting five next to Utah, which also happens to be the other AAU squad. And both of these teams basically have the same formula. Run, cause turnovers. So with all that athleticism, the Bucks are just able to out-hustle people, you know, on the glass, you know, getting fast break opportunities, second chance points. They're able to do a lot of things because the game recognizes those young legs, and even though the players aren't as efficient, they're capitalizing on opportunities that they're getting from the athleticism.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think the catalyst for this team right now is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. This guy really was a player that was frustrating Bad Wolf for the last year or so, and now he's the second leading scorer in the game for the team, 22 points a game. You know, it doesn't hurt that you end up with the best or the number one draft pick on your team as well. But I agree.
But at what cost? You got rid of DeMarcus Cousins. But I guess Boogie hasn't played the first 2 weeks of the season, so.
Boogie also costs 2.5 times more than Karl Anthony Towns does. Yep. He's going to have Karl Anthony Towns' QO offer in the next 3 or 4 years.
He'll be too old by that point. He'll have traded him.
Well, and then he trades him for another draft pick.
Right.
But the biggest issue is definitely going to be the injury bug here. Gortat went down this week. Brandon White's still out.
But Gortat's got a family emergency, so he'll be back. He just went to Poland because his mother was sick. But you've got...
He is, but he lost them for the week.
Yeah.
And he's thin in terms of replacements on that team. He's got a good starting five. But when you go past that starting five, he doesn't have a lot of offense on the rest of that bench. And he really doesn't have a lot of big men. I mean, the next player you're talking about, the next man up, is Noah Vonleh. And Noah Vonleh is as unproven as it gets in the NLL right now. So in order for Milwaukee to stay as a contender, he's going to have to stay healthy. And he really – he's done a good job. He's played some good teams, but I think everybody's going to adjust. And if he doesn't have the ability to reload and have those backups – I can't see him being more than maybe a 6th seed in the East.
And that's usually his place. All right, let's shift gears. We'll talk about the worst teams. There's always a silver lining. You know, Chicago won their first game, and now they're en route to win their second game, it looks like. They're beating the Trailblazers by a good margin right now, who surprisingly aren't...
12 points right.
Yeah, I mean, they beat the Golden State. I mean, surprisingly, Portland isn't in the bottom five. So at this point, but Craig, the Bulls are always rebuilding, it seems like. They haven't been good in years. Is that a reflection on the GM, or is it just bad luck? I mean, they do have one of the best players in the league in Stephen Curry that someone we know gave to him, but why are the Bulls so bad all the time? Is Daz a bad GM? What's going on over there?
Nah, I think he's a pretty good GM. I just think that he's had some misfortune, especially, you know, he gets this deal and a player goes down for an extended period of time. Kind of remind me of my early years with Utah when, you know, I had three of the best guards in the league, with two of them was hurt all season, and the small forward got suspended for 2 years. So it's just, you know, it's just sometimes you run into the string of bad luck, and you need to get into a situation where, you know, you have an opportunity for the players to show what they can do, because he's got three key guys that are really good. He's got Lance Stevenson, Stephen Curry, and Andrew Bogut. So those are three solid guys that can help a team win games. You know, just that the other pieces haven't quite come together yet. So it's just a matter of getting that one more guy, or that one trade too many becomes the one more trade that you need to do to get you over the top and get you to the point where you're at least playing 500 ball. And once you're playing 500 ball, then at the end of the season, you can really start making moves, because for the most part, it's just a matter of getting what you got to gel and mesh and bringing in just one more key guy who doesn't necessarily have to be an all-star. Just that one more key guy that can bring a little something, a little more hustle, a little more rebounding edge, or like
right.
a glue guy.
The only problem with that, though, Craig, is when you don't have much to give, it's hard to get a key guy back. I mean, if you look at this guy's bench, I mean, I don't know who they're going to take or be able to give away for a key guy. You know, they can't trade Curry.
No.
Yeah. You know.
He's got stuff he can move. He's got stuff he can move.
He does have pieces.
Yeah, he's
I
got
agree.
Pieces that he can move to get that, like to get a key guy.
All right,
guy.
Let's help him out. What can he move? What should he move to get a key guy? Let's help him out.
He needs a starting power forward, so he can move Patterson and Derek Williams and Joe Ingles and bring back a starting power forward. No, not an all-star power forward, but a guy that's better than Patterson.
Well. I agree with you, Craig, in some instances on Chicago. He does have a good three to build around him with Curry, Stevenson, and Bogut. But the problem is after that, there's a huge drop-off. I mean, the next player that's the best on that team is Patrick Patterson. And, I mean, that guy's a journeyman at best in the NBA. Now, Daz isn't a bad GM, but here's the situation that I see with Daz. I look at Daz like I look at Sheed about 3.5 years ago, when he was more worried about getting players he liked on the team versus getting players that will help him win on the team.
Because he's a Golden State Warriors fan. That's true. That's why he gave me so much for Kevin Looney.
He gave up. Now, don't get me wrong. I get it. He said himself, Stephen Curry's his favorite player. He gave up a lot to get Stephen Curry. He gave up a lot of depth. And depth in this league is really what you need, because you have to be able to overcome that first, that second, that third injury. And if you can't reload, you are not going to make it far in this league. If you look at all the teams that continually make it in the NLL, they're teams that have a bench. And right now, when your number one player off the bench is Pablo Prioni, you are not going to go far in the NLL.
So what does he do?
I agree with the favorite player thing. Definitely never, ever trade for your favorite player.
This
is coming from the guy that traded for Ron Artest and Kevin Martin every time I turn around.
Yeah, but I bring those guys in as
Rudy Gay.
I bring those guys in as role players, and I rarely ever give up anything of value.
Yeah, I mean, you have to remember when he went for Steph Curry, he said it's his favorite player, and I want to point out 3 years ago. We were talking about Lin Sanity and Sheed, and all of us on the radio show kept saying, Sheed, you got to get rid of Jeremy Lin. This is what's messing you up. It looks like this year, an offseason, Sheed finally listened, and he started making moves for players that fit his team versus players that he really liked. And look what he's doing this year. And I think if Chicago can turn around and start saying, all right, look, I love Seth Curry. I love Steph Curry, but I'll move him if somebody's giving me half their team for him.
You know what Sting says, right? If you love somebody, let's set them free.
Mm. Honestly,
set Curry free on a team that competes.
I don't mind if he keeps. I don't mind if he keeps Curry. Curry's a good player for him to keep. That's a great building block for him. But what he needs to do is he needs to go ahead and say, "All right, there's a lot of people that want big men, and my team's not doing well right now." He can move Andrew Bogut and get good pieces.
No, I agree with you. Bogut might be the guy to use, but then, you know, everyone's going to use the, oh, he's injury prone and not give him as much. But yeah, I think he can move Lance Stevenson. He's a guy I don't think is as good as everyone thinks he is. Look at his shooting ratings. They're awful.
Yeah, but there's people that'll go for him.
Stevenson is a glue guy. He's not a guy that you really want to score points. He's a glue guy.
Yeah. Honestly,
he gave a Bell Jefferson for him. But, I mean, he didn't need
Al
him.
Jefferson's also in his final year of his contract,
right,
and is probably not going to re-sign.
Right, but that's
so
the thing.
I
mean, I've always
that.
Talked about giving up like guys with big contracts and getting two or three good guys back instead of trading one for one, especially if you're not doing well.
Yeah.
But anyway, we got to move on. But what were we going to say, Craig?
Let's
move on.
I don't really follow the ideology of this guy. Oh, he's only got 1 year left, and he might not re-sign with his team. I mean, so what? So what if he doesn't re-sign with his team? That's just further opportunity. To me, you want the best players on your team all the time. If it's a guy that's got 1 year or 10 years, you want the best players all the time, because if you're winning games, you can do anything.
Okay, now wait a minute. I got Darko here to argue your point against you. Hang on a second.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, wait, he's too scared to talk. He's trying to convince trade all of the guys that are on. He's trying to trade the guys that are on 3-year deals away to get the guys on 5-year deals because he doesn't want to deal with it. So, anyway, moving on. Next team, New Orleans Pelicans. This guy's in my sights today. You know, he's 1-8. I have his draft pick, so that makes me happy. I don't really want to wish misfortune on anyone, but if the Pelicans lose the rest of their games this season, I'll be happy. But sometimes I wonder, like, you ever get those offers and wonder, like, what's the guy been smoking?
Every day.
Okay, so he sent me an offer today, and I'm like, how long have you been in this league? Because, first of all, it was a bad offer. Like, I wouldn't have done it. But second, it didn't make sense. He's offering me a guy who makes $13.5 million for another guy who makes five? Okay, mathematics. But, so it's like, when that type of offer is being put out there, there's like a serious offer, and I'm not going to even talk about what the rest of it was, just because it was so, like, yeah, right, buddy. What kind of thing, I mean, it's like, who's running the show over there, you know what I mean?
Well, I think sometimes, again, what happens is you get a situation where players are overvalued by their GMs, and this happens a lot. It's not something that any of us are immune to. We've all done it, but it happens. And I think right now, because the GM in New Orleans is a newer GM, he's getting that, I know what the guy can do, and because of that, he's worth at least this. And in some cases, that works. I mean, you will get people that bite. But you also have to be careful, because you have to know who your trade partner is. Now,
yeah,
in that situation,
what's interesting
with you,
good. Finish.
I was going to say, in that situation with you, first off, you can't even make that trade, the 13.5 for $5 million.
Yeah.
So that means that he's going to have to get something else back. And if he's off asking for anything that's even equal value, but he's still got to get more, it's not going to happen. You know, unless he's giving up draft picks or things like that back. And a lot of times you have to, especially once the season starts, you have to start thinking about how things fit in terms of salary cap, in terms of players, and how the overall value of that trade is going to go. Because once the season starts, people tend to get a little tentative about moving certain players. It's just the way it goes.
You know what's interesting is, like, I was talking to Lattice the other day, and you know, there are definitely older GMs that I've never completed a deal with just because they're impossible to trade with, and we won't go down that road right now. But there's a crop of new GMs that I feel like, and Lattice feels the same way we were talking about this, that just don't get it. And it makes it really hard to trade with them, because they're always looking just for the, you know, there's no such thing as for them as, like, a fair deal. They're always looking for, like, oh, hey, give me the draft pick that's ranked number one and your best rookie player, and I'll give you this aging veteran that's on an expiring contract. You know, it's like,
But you know what, Dave? That's not even necessarily their fault, because they came into the league, and then you're seeing certain trades that are very lopsided. And they're saying, well, if Houston can do that deal, well, why can't I get that deal? Or if Miami can go ahead and make that trade and get all this stuff and give up nothing, then why can't I make that trade? And the problem is you have to – every trade is different. And every team, there's a certain value that each player is assigned. And depending on the situation, like, for example, I know last year Craig was hurting to get a starting a real good – facilitating point guard, and he wanted a big man. So what did he do? He went and facilitated a trade to get Tim Duncan and to go ahead and get Rajon Rondo. He gave up a hell of a lot to do it, and some people thought it was a bad trade for him, and other people thought it was a great trade for him. But the point is
you
have
to assess.
Oh, wait,
and you mean they were both on expiring contracts, and guess what team they're playing for now?
They're both – well, but Tim Duncan's one of those. He's never going to leave the Spurs. So that was a safe bet. The big risk for him was Rondo, and it's quite possible he could have lost him in free agency.
But
he took the risk, he got him back.
But my point is don't be scared of that expiring contract. It's not a reason to.
Yeah, you definitely can't be scared of expiring contract. And so many times I'm making offers. I'm talking to guys. I don't really make offers. I'm talking to guys, and they're like, oh, well, I don't want this guy because his contract is up. And I'm thinking, what's more important, either winning games or having, you know, a player on a contract for 10 years and you don't win games. So for me, it's always win now, always win now. True, it's fun to develop players. You watch players develop, and they do this and they do that. But once you get out of that phase, you can't be afraid. In fact, right now, the NBA wants players on shorter contracts because they want that flexibility. Because if it doesn't work out, they want to be able to walk away from that and not be tied to a guy that's got, you know, 5 years on $20 million a year. And he's a bum, you know, so they have an out. So right now, teams are really looking for that great flexibility, that capital. And as GMs in this league that mirrors a lot of the NBA ideology, we should be looking for that same flexibility, because the key is always to I don't want to develop players, I want to win games. And so that's why a lot of GMs, in fact, trade to send Mark Gasol to Washington. When I proposed that deal, which is very, I really don't propose deals. I kind of just talk to people and find out what they need and then kind of match everything up. But when I proposed that deal to Darko, he was like, I can't believe you actually want draft picks. Well, I didn't, but I knew another team did. So basically, I just, you know, it's like, hey, well, give me that, and I'll send it to this other team, and then I'll get what I really want. So the idea is that just because you don't want what's on this team doesn't mean that somebody else don't want it. And so that's see me involved in so many multi-team deals, and the same for, you know, Flavio in Utah. He's involved in a lot of multi-team deals too, because it's not just about what's on team A, it's what's on team B or C, and now we can kind of get yourself in position to improve. And I do feel a lot of teams did improve this season, and New Orleans, I think New Orleans should be at least 500 right now. They've got some injury issues that are keeping that team. They got an injury issue, and they have a lineup issue with the rotation that's keeping them from winning games. I don't know if he wants to know what to do to win those games, but he just needs to make one change in his healthy lineup, and he'll be.
Well, go ahead and tell him. Go ahead and tell him.
I actually think he's got to make three changes, but my first change would be, it obviously doesn't seem that Al Jefferson and Jahlil Okafor are going to work together in terms of the way he had them. There's things he could do to probably change that, maybe flip-flop Al and Jahlil. But what the biggest issue I see is he's got a lot of jump shooters, and that's all that's going on, and he's not getting a lot of points in the paint. And he's got to find a way to fix that. And if he fixes that, I think that'll make a big difference, because he's given up like 113 points a game and only scoring 106.
Yeah, the change I was thinking was bench Korver. I love Korver. He's an excellent shooter, but he's slow as a cold snail. And so that is just something that you can't do.
But keep in mind, Chandler Parsons was hurt in week one too.
Yeah.
Now I would think that his normal starting lineup would probably be something like Brandon Knight, Jeremy Lin, Chandler Parsons, and then probably, to me, makes better sense, Al Jeff at the power forward and Jahlil at the center. But, you know, he might also want to turn around and put somebody like Cody Zeller that doesn't want to score in the paint as much with somebody like Al Jeff and Jahlil, and bring the other one off the bench for another 20-30 minutes, playing them at the PF center, so that way he rotates into both positions, gets some opportunity for Al and Jahlil to play together. But I think the problem is both of them want the ball in the paint, and both of them want to post up, and then neither of them want to help each other, and they get in each other's way.
Well, he can fix that by getting Korver out of their starting lineup and finding the right playbook that'll run high-low post. So if he's running high-low post, then that one guy is going to be forced to kind of stand at that elbow and give them just a little bit more room. Hopefully, if the offense is going fast enough, it won't matter. You know.
And then the other problem is he needs some more bench scoring.
That's where Korver could come in. If Korver's on the bench, you know, and standing in the corner for the second unit, he can score double digits.
Trey Burke is shooting him out of games. He has like the lowest field goal percentage of any of his players that shoot at least 70 shots a year. He's shooting 38% field goal percentage. That's gonna hurt.
All right, we got three more teams to get through, and we're running along here. Moving on to my favorite GM, Javi Joe, and the Minnesota Timberwolves, 3-9. Javi Joe hasn't had a healthy squad all season until now. We'll see what his guys can do. You know, he's got a lot of injury prone players on his team. However, he still barely squeaked by the Nuggets by 1 point. He got blown out by the champions, Lakers, here. We all know what the problem is. Javi doesn't want to fix it. Craig.
Power forward without giving up the whole team.
Mm-hmm. You hit that right on the bullseye.
Yeah, he needs a power forward, but he doesn't need to give up the whole team, but he's got to give up a player of value. He's got to give up somebody that people want to get that power forward.
Well, if you talk to him, Nerlens Noel is the next, I don't know, who's a good center? So, I don't know, somebody great.
Marcus Camby?
Yeah, there you go. Not even, probably better according to Javi.
Whatever happened too, right?
Yeah.
Well, You know, to be honest with you, this is another one of those situations where he gets players he loves versus getting players that fit his team. Nerlens Noel is a good player, but Nerlens Noel is not a big scorer. He's a rebounder and a defender. And the problem is he put Nerlens Noel and Andrea Bargnani on the court together. And first off, anytime Andrea Bargnani is on the court with anybody else on your team, you're in trouble. I mean, the fact that he even made it on the court is a shock to me because the guy hasn't played a game in like 6 years. But
hey, he's played 10 games for the Timberwolves already this year.
Like I said, I'm in shock. Yeah. That already is the feat of the year right there, Bargnani played.
Yeah, most improved player. You heard it here first.
I'll be honest with you. The guy that he needs to move is Tyreek Evans. Tyreek Evans has a skill set. There's a lot of people that want that skill set, and I think a couple people would be willing to give up a really good power forward because right now he's playing Paul George at the power forward, and that is not his position.
Oh, yeah.
Paul George needs to be that starting small forward. Tyreek Evans shouldn't even be in his starting five with the lineup that he has of Kyle Lowry, Bradley Beal, and Paul George.
Oh, yeah.
He shouldn't be there.
And I've had that conversation with him all summer. That Tyreek Evans is the guy he needs to move to get the player that he needs, but he doesn't want to move him. So it's crazy because Tyreek Evans is technically injury prone. And I'm not saying that I wouldn't trade for him because I definitely would, but he's injury prone. So why would you hold up making your team better to hang on to an injury prone player that comes off your bench?
And you know what he can do? He could turn around and take Tyreek Evans and Jose Calderon, who we all know he's been shopping for a while, package the two of them together to get that $20-something million power forward and get a real cheap point guard. Because you know what? That backup point guard is going to play 13 minutes for him because Kyle Lowry runs that team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I don't know. Craig and I had an interesting discussion the other day about what it's like trading with Javi, though.
I can't remember.
Oh, wait a second. Hold on. Wait. Okay.
I can't remember what I said. I'll let you go ahead and say it. I'm sure it was something funny.
let me take a guess before you say anything. Hey, Craig, so this is the deal, right? I'm going to send you player A, player B, and player C for your player D, E, F. And then I'm going to send it. It's player G, H, and I for player A, B, and C from you.
No.
Did I get that about right?
We were just having a dialogue about what it's like to trade with him, and I made some sort of analogy.
I said it was like being drunk while falling in through a black hole into another dimension and going through a time warp at the same time.
Hey, Javi the person, great guy. I got nothing but love for Javi the person. Javi the GM, oh my God, please don't ring my phone and ask me for a trade that we agree on. Dude, I'd rather have him say no to the trade in the beginning because once he agrees to it, it changes 7 times from when we said yes and we both agreed to it to when it actually hits my inbox.
Well, what's even worse is when he's like says hi and you ask him for if he likes a trade, he says yeah and then doesn't come back for 2 days.
I'm actually starting to do that. I'm starting to become guilty of that because I checked ICQ the other day and had like 50 messages from people who were just like, hey, what's up? And I was just like, oh shit, really? Yeah, I don't know. I think the worst thing that ever happened to me was putting ICQ on my phone.
Yeah, I took mine off. But the good news is now that Houndy's gone, or Houndy didn't like me. But when Houndy did like me, I used to get messages every 2 minutes, and now it's quiet. Guys, don't message me. I'll message you. Okay. Let's move on to the next team. Got two more. The next one's gonna be easy. It's not you. It's me. Okay. The next one we don't really have to spend much time on because the guy knows the team sucks and wants it to suck, and that's the Clippers, right? Even though he doesn't have his first rounder anymore, does he?
He doesn't have his first rounder, okay. But I'm sure he still has a couple other people.
He has yours, and that's it.
That's it? That's all he has?
Yeah, what is it?
Man, hey, you better do something with that first rounder because it's not going to be high, or not going to be a high pick. I'll tell you that right now.
He traded. Where did his first rounder go? I'm trying to figure it out.
I don't know. Let me see real quick. I'll see if I can find it.
It might have been in that mega deal, and that's hurting my eyes, so I didn't want to think about it.
I'm pretty sure it did go in that one. No. He did it to get Alex Burks.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not a bad move.
No. And you know what? If you look at this roster now from the roster he had before the season started, I like what I'm seeing with it. He knows it's not a sprint. It's a marathon. He's got D'Angelo Russell, 19 years old. He's got Alex Burks, really great scorer. DeMar Carroll he's got on the team. He picked up.
I think Penny dropped out.
Tyus Gibson. He's got Kevin Garnett, who would probably be better off. What's that?
You dropped out from
me. You hear me?
Yeah, we hear you.
Oh, okay. You hear me?
Saying
okay,
something about how he wanted to trade for Kevin Garnett.
No, no, no. I was saying he's got Kevin Garnett, who's going to be better off. Here's the only thing that surprised me, I'll be honest with you, is I was surprised he made the trade and moved to Hassan Whiteside. I think that was a player that he could have kept. Now, granted, I heard he got two draft picks for it, and so that's why we're only seeing one in there. If I remember correctly, he's getting the 2016 first in that deal as well.
Well, I scratched my head till it bled on that one, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, hey, you know, I think he partially falls into that Darko rule of thought or train of thought where it's like, he might not re-sign with Miami. I got to move him and get something. I got to get something I can.
Oh, man, I had something funny to say about Darko this summer. It's like the minute someone said, I forget who it was. Was it Gordon Hayward? One of his guys was a restricted free agent. And the minute that the guy hit the free agent pool, like the minute there was already a ticker up there, like Darko saying, we'll match any offer. Don't bother. It's like Darko like swinging a torch at like whoever's coming after him, yelling.
Marcus Morris.
That's what it was.
And, honestly, was it Marcus or Markeith? I can't remember.
It was Marcus.
One of the Morris brothers. And what you said, just you know what it made me think of? It made me think of the old like Frankenstein movies with all the guys out there with pitchforks and torches, like waving them, like get out of here! I got you, get out of here!
Yeah, but I see him like shaking it in the darkness, like he doesn't know where the assailant's coming from. He's like shaking the, he's swinging the torch at him. And,
right.
Like,
yeah. You know,
and looking really scared, his eyes all bugging out.
The thing that really puzzled me about the Hassan Whiteside trade, I always say it wrong, about the Hassan Whiteside trade is that I can tell anybody right now he's not going to be able to re-sign with Miami. And the reason why is Miami doesn't have the Burr years. Okay, so they don't have the Burr years on his deal to be able to keep him for what he's worth. So he's going to be gone, but the Clippers have the points to keep him.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
They have 100%. The points to keep him, and they have the cap.
Well, now so they can sign him. They can sign him when he leaves.
Well, you know, he's definitely leaving Miami, not because he wants to or because they don't want him, but because they're not going to have the cap space, because they're not going to be able to talk Wade into taking another pay cut. It's just not going to happen. So that's
you think Wade's coming back?
Yeah, Wade will be back one more year. You know, basically playing like Kobe's playing right now, but he'll be back one more year.
How bad is that? What is he shooting? 33% from the field? Oh my god.
Oh what?
No, you know, you might have hit onto something here. Andrew might be doing that whole reverse psychology. Hey, here, I'm gonna trade you Hassan Whiteside.
You keep dropping out, man.
Draft picks in a player, and then I'm gonna dump all 99 of my points on him in free agency.
Hey, that's a possibility. I mean, that's a possibility. I don't know what sports based plans are, but he's only got 38 points. He does have cap. He will have cap to keep him, but he's going to need as many points as he can get, because I can bet my whole team that Whiteside will not be able to stay in Miami simply because the cap space doesn't allow it.
Well, and you're going to need your GM points, because I have a feeling that Whiteside might end up being probably the biggest player in free agency next year.
Yeah, yeah, he's basically going to go from being the best bargain to being the most overpaid.
Easily.
Unless he dies. Okay, last one. Detroit. Oh, what's the bottom five without a Detroit sighting? Penny.
And man, God, I hate beating on this guy.
Like, I'm not going to say anything bad because I'm trying to get a player off him. So, you know, Detroit, whatever you're doing is awesome.
Look, it's like beating a dead horse. I don't want to do it, but it's like, but yeah. Have to. It's that Detroit is that freeway accident on the other side that everybody stops to look at. You don't want to, but you got to see just like what really happened. Oh my god! Oh, there's a leg all flying out, but you got to look. Detroit.
That's cruel.
Detroit. look, and I say that with the best intention. Detroit frustrated me with the Pau Gasol trade, and here's why. He had a good younger nucleus. I know Pau Gasol is the better NLL player, but he could have had Horford for longer to pair him up with Eric Bledsoe. You've got Joe Johnson coming off the cap at the end of the year, $25 million. He's got the opportunity to do things. I mean, what I'd really like to see is him to put the starting lineup of Heinrich Bledsoe, Joe Johnson, Pau Gasol. You're gonna have to put him at power forward, and you're gonna have to put and Spencer Hall's at center. That's your best bet for a starting five. Hollis Thompson has no business being a power forward in this league. He's a crappy small forward speed wise. He's a crappier version of Kyle Korver. He can hit some threes. He can't play any D, and he's a liability on defense.
I'm trying to convince him to trade one of his veterans to me for a bunch of younger pieces that could help him in the future.
Well, it would depend on the younger pieces that you were giving him. I mean, if you were to give something of good value, then maybe it's probably worth it. But what this guy needs to do is not trade Eric Bledsoe.
It's not Bledsoe what I'm looking for.
I'm just saying he's been talking about possibly trading him. I'm going to tell you right now, hey, Mavs for Life, this is not a guy you trade. That's the cornerstone of your team right now. You trade all the other players around Eric Bledsoe to fill that team, but Eric Bledsoe needs to be there.
I feel this team can win games. I just think that lineup that you mentioned with Heinrich in the starting lineup and Hollis at center and Pau Gasol at power forward, that is the lineup that can win games. That lineup can win games, and I've been sitting here waiting for him to either ask me what lineup to use or to come up on that himself. Granted, Heinrich is another cold snail as far as speed goes, but he doesn't make mistakes. He brings the ball up court, he gives it to the right guy, and he's the kind of point guard that allows the other players to shine because he's not trying to dominate and score 50 points all by himself.
Unless you put him at shooting guard like I did last year a couple of times and he, like, rocked it, you remember?
Well, yeah, he can. He can, but he doesn't have to do that because he's got Bledsoe and Joe Johnson who were, nearly 20 a game on a good day. So he doesn't need him there. So if he had him at point guard, he's the last guy up court. They get their set in place, and, you know, they can score. Hollis is not going to be terrible on the glass, but he can step out and hit some threes. And Gasol was going to average a double-double no matter what. So
Yeah, I agree. You're 100% correct.
Yes.
Now, one of the things he might want to do is instead of putting Pau at the center is flip and put Hawes at the power forward.
This just because, in. The like Bulls beat the Trailblazers.
Oh, congrats.
What is that, win number two?
Win number two.
2 in a week.
Hey, you're only a couple more wins out of the bottom five, and we wouldn't even be talking about
it. Yeah, but keep in mind, the streaking is illegal in Chicago, so, you know.
Only after 4 p.m.
Hey, he's only three wins behind the Lakers.
Oh, my goodness. How is that for the shock of the year right now, the Lakers? Who would have picked them to be under 500 10 games in?
I didn't even know they were under 500. It shows how much I've been paying attention.
They're 5-6 right now.
Really? It's currently the same team from last year, right?
I believe so, minus a player or two.
That's the thing, though. You don't have to even mention Greenman because he's going to figure it out. He's going to figure it out. Yeah. We can say, he's underperforming right now, but the minute that we say that, you know, he's going to go on a 30-game win streak, so I'm not going to say nothing. I'm just going to be quiet.
One of the biggest things for him so far has been the injuries. Last week, I think he had Jordan Hill out. This week, he's got Tyson Chandler out, and I mean, those are the linchpins of his defense. And if those two aren't in there,
Manu was out the first 2 weeks also, resting.
Yeah, and he's had issues with his point guard. He hasn't seemed to been able to settle on who's going to be his starting point guard. Collison was in there the other week. He's got Jack in there this week. I think he's still trying to feel out the team with the changes in the playbook and the coaching profiles, and he has not nailed it yet. I'll tell you that.
And that's a whole another radio show episode.
What's that?
The changes in the playbook and the profiles.
They seem to be working pretty good.
They're working sort of.
This is Craig, man. This is the guy who doesn't like Craig. Anything unless he does it himself. You know.
No,
Craig is going to be banned from all future radio shows.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's not about whether I like it or not. You know, it's just there's some things that just aren't working, you know. So That's, I mean, there's always going to be something that's not working because the game as a whole was not designed to do what we're doing with it. So there's always going to be a pro and a con to any change that we make. So, I mean, it's like I say, it's a whole another show by itself, and we're pushing it here.
Well, if you watch the games, though, the one thing I will say, I mean, the thing that sucks about our league, the only big negative about the league is you really can't actually watch your games. You can watch the box scores and the play-by-play, but you can't actually watch the game and see what's going on. Are they setting picks? Are they flowing the offense well? And I can tell you from doing numerous sims all summer that they're not just standing around like they used to. And Craig being one of the people that have helped me as far as sim testing for the last 2 years, you know what I'm talking about when I say we would run sims and the point guard would sit with the ball for 20 seconds and then just chuck up a three.
Well, I like that.
Yeah. I'm sure you do it with Rajon Rondo as your point guard. I know you like that.
Hey. Oh, speaking of Rondo, oh my God, look at that free throw percentage, right? Jesus Christ.
Man, where's he at now?
Like 42.
One of the main reasons I traded him.
Yeah, 42%. You know, hey, so when they're in the forum and they're talking about, oh yeah, we didn't increase the free throw difficulty, but no.
Poor Greg's like, he can't shoot much lower.
All right, guys, we should wrap it up. I mean, it's been a lot longer than a half hour. So anyway,
but it was a fun one.
It was a fun one, man. It was like, you know, it's more fun than watching a real NBA game. Yeah,
more fun than trading with Javi.
All right, let's play association real quick. First thing that comes to mind: what is more fun than trading with Javi? Go.
Ripping my fingernails off.
I was going to say watching the Muppet Show.
Hey.
I was going to say watching Craig watch the Muppet Show.
Oh, man. It's a riot, I tell you, man.
All right, well. What's that?
More fun than trading with Javi?
What's that?
Probably watching Washington try to move players.
Oh, you know what my favorite? Actually, speaking of trading players, I always get a kick out of reading the Bucks trade block. Like, oh, such and such might be available, but not really. I just want to see maybe if he's available, but not. You know, the funny thing with that guy is, like I said the other day with somebody with the Bucks, it's like if I draft a guy at number 23rd on the draft, it's like driving a car off with him. It's like driving the car off a lot new. If I draft a guy at 23rd, he'll offer me like a 3 second rounder or something like that, like a breath later. He's like, oh yeah.
Well, he's got that Jimmy Johnson chart. 3 second rounders equal to 20 second.
Or maybe he'll offer me. Maybe you know what? I take it back. He'll offer me 1 second rounder, not even three. That makes too much sense. All right. Anyway, on that note, guys, you know, group hug. Have a good night. I'll post this thing now. And one last thing, I got the torch out for you.
All right, guys, have a good one.
I'll match any offer, I swear.